Op donderdagaande gesels ek altyd met 'n gesiene Suid-Afrikaanse sakepersoon en ons gesels oor die bedrywe en maatskappye waar hulle betrokke is en ook wat hulle dink van wat tans in Suid-Afrika gebeur. Vanaand gesels ek met Magda Wierzycka, sy is die stigter en die hoof van Signia Batebestuur. Sy is een van die vurigste uitvoerende hoofde in die land en sy was een van die eerste senior sakepersone wat openlik haar ontevredenheid teenoor staatskaping en ook korporatiewe korrupsie uitgespreek het. Magda, thank you so much for joining me. The last time we spoke was a year ago, and then we focused on rebuilding the economy in a post-Zuma era, bringing corrupt government officials to book. Phew, a lot has happened since then. The world has changed.
The world has changed indeed, Rijk. I think the world has changed in many unexpected ways. You know, I don't think anyone, if you reverse back to, February, I don't think anyone would have predicted and could have predicted what we are living through today and, how difficult the times ahead of us will be.
I think we don't know what's going to happen in future. But has COVID-19 affected you or Signia significantly?
No, it hasn't. And I mean, we are very, I've got to be very sensitive to the fact that obviously it has affected a lot of people. We were declared as an essential service because we process a lot of payments, pensions. And so we could operate, through the period. We were never in lockdown. We obviously had kind of two frantic weeks when suddenly all your disaster recovery plans had to be thrown out the window and reinvented. And we had to send about 70% of our staff home so that they can work from home. But, we are in a very, very fortunate position in that, we have not been had to retrench anybody. In fact, we've been very actively hiring through this period. We continue to grow. The fact that people are focusing, more and more on paying low fees, passive investments as a strategy are gaining, in particular among retail investors, has meant that, we've attracted a lot of money on the retail side. So we are actually in a very good spot, which is not to say South Africa is, and it's not to say that I am mentally, because as much as Signia might be doing well, I am absolutely petrified about what is going on in South Africa and traumatized by, what is happening to our SME sector in particular.
We saw in the first quarter a 2% decline in economic growth. Everybody said, phew, it could have been worse. The second quarter is going to be absolutely blood on the streets. How do you think the economy will cope with what we are experiencing now?
Like, it's such a difficult thing because, and there are a lot of different dissenting views on this. So the 2% decline that we saw in the first quarter, you can attribute to Eskom and Eskom alone and load shedding. So that had absolutely nothing to do with COVID yet. The true numbers are coming. And, the projections, and I think they probably positive projections are for a contraction over 2020 of around 7.5% in our GDP. Now, that doesn't mean much to the men in the street, but things such as 50% official unemployment rate does mean something. I think this is where we're heading. We are heading for massive amounts of unemployment. I can't see, there are sectors of the economy that this virus has, over the short to medium term, literally closed down. So anything, associated with tourism. And tourism affects everything from the restaurant industry, hotel industry, film industry, for that matter, the curio shops. So the fact that, tourism is not going to recover for the foreseeable future has such humongous knock-on effects on an economy such as South Africa that I think whatever kind of global numbers we see, in terms of 7.5% contraction in GDP hide the destruction, absolute 100% destruction that has happened in certain sectors of this economy. I've been, living in South Africa since I was 12 years old, arrived here early 1980s. One thing I have never witnessed in South Africa is people queuing for food. Hundreds and hundreds of people queuing for food. And we are seeing it now. And, that truly is traumatizing to see.
You came to South Africa in 1983, and that was after your family was in a refugee camp.
In
You,
Austria,
in
ref
or,
we escaped Poland refugee camp in Austria.
and you came to South Africa in 1983, a poor family. Tell us your story. How did you become to be one of the richest women in South Africa, one of the most outspoken CEOs, and somebody that's really making a difference?
Well, I would like to be known for the most outspoken. I think, money, paper wealth, owning shares, insignia, that's not as important to me as being able to, being able to have a voice, because that way, hopefully, you can at least reach some people and make a difference. But my story is, look, it's just a story, not dissimilar to a lot of immigrant stories. You arrive with absolutely nothing. So my parents were medical doctors. We arrived here. They were in their 40s. We arrived literally three children, grandmother and parents, two suitcases and $500 in the bank. They had to, concentrate recreating a life while we went. I mean, I went to high school, Pretoria Girls High, and we had to kind of take care of ourselves. We didn't speak any English. We didn't speak Afrikaans. So, you grew up much faster, I think, than normal kid who goes through a very linear kind of, sheltered life. And then, there wasn't any money to send me to university, so I had to apply for a bursary, and the only bursaries going were for something called actuarial science. I didn't know what actuarial science was. I'm not convinced I do today. But I applied. Unfortunately, that paid for my entire studies and, qualified as an actuary. Didn't last for a long time working as an actuary in a company called Southern Life. I very quickly discovered investments and the world of investments. And I've always been very interested in macroeconomics. If you said to me, apart from fighting corruption, what is my big passion in life? It's actually analysis of macroeconomic trends. And those have, very significantly influenced by politics as well. So that's a big passion. So I moved into investments. I ran the very first, designed and ran the very first index tracking fund in South Africa in 1993, before I joined Coronation Fund Managers, which was then a startup. And when I joined Coronation, it was a bunch of very clever portfolio managers, but they didn't want to get involved with the business side of things. So they said to me, "We'll manage money. You do everything else. Everything else." Which was, probably the best education I could have gotten at the ripe age of 25. Because, I call it my Wild West days. No one cared what I did. I launched products. I applied for a life insurance license. I did the marketing slides. I dealt with the legal issues. So that was great. And then, 6.5 years into that, Coronation grew up, was very successful. The owner of Coronation decided to list it. There weren't any shares made available to staff. So I decided that, possibly it's time to start my own company. I left, and I started the first fund of hedge funds in South Africa. But, that only lasted for 6 months before I was approached by a gentleman by the name of Mzi Khumalo, who I love to bits, by the way. There's a lot of misinformation about Mzi, but it took someone like Mzi Khumalo to give a 32-year woman a chance. He has recently purchased a company called African Harvest, also a fund management outfit. He didn't do a due diligence on that purchase. It turned out to be a bankrupt company for which he paid 300 million rand, and he needed someone fairly naive to agree to run that company.
When
So
was that?
this was 2003. And so, he set up via an intermediary, set up a lunch with me, and literally, I didn't know he was going to be there, but, I went to this lunch and he looked at me. He said, "Hi, Magda, I'm Mzi Khumalo. You've got a business. I've got a business. Let's make a deal." And of course, I didn't have a business. I just had a really nice office that I've started. He, I thought, had a business. Little did I know. And so, I said, okay, let me sell my non-business to your business. And I took over running African Harvest as CEO. And of course, my first day at African Harvest, I arrived and there was this big white envelope on the desk. And it was a due diligence report that he commissioned after he bought African Harvest. And literally the attorneys at law who did the due diligence report felt so strongly about the mess that they found that they actually titled it as culture of, I think, greed, mismanagement, and fraud. So I phoned Mzi and I said, Mzi, what on earth? And he said to me, Magda, it's not that I didn't tell you the truth. It's just that you really didn't ask the right questions.
And you fixed it.
And I fixed it. It took 3 years. I had a great team of people who came with me from Coronation, and we fixed it. No one knew any better. We cleaned it up. We sorted out all the tax issues. We grew the assets threefold. And at the end of 3 years, when Z realized he could recover his money, he phoned me. He said, Magda, sell the business. You've got 2 weeks. So it took a little bit longer, but we sold African Harvest to Acadis. And the team that kind of worked for me while I was in the middle of negotiating my very first transaction came to me and said, so Magda, what are we all doing next? And I kind of went, well, who is we? And I was given a list of staff who had no intention of going with Cadiz. They were going to go to whatever we are all going to do next.
Is
And
that where
really,
Signia was born?
that's how Signia was born. Literally 7 people in the room. We had no funding, no external investors, and no particular business model or plan at that stage. So we sat down. We again moved to really nice offices. I'm a big believer in nice offices. So that's the one thing I paid for, nice offices. We sat around the boardroom table and said, how can we reinvent financial services industry? What can we do different? And that's where the concepts such as technology is key, low cost, lowest cost possible, transparency, passive investing, all these themes, and innovation. All these themes that kind of permeate through Signia today, actually, they originated from that kind of strategy meeting where we said, let's start financial services from scratch. Let's take a whiteboard and white piece of paper and say, if we had the option, what would we like financial services to look like? Simplicity. Speak in English, not in jargon. Make things simple and accessible for investors. Make things cost effective. And so that's really it. That's the story.
What is your fund under management now?
I think it's around 236 billion.
Yeah, unbelievable success story.
And
But Magda, the time is not on our side.
agreed.
Recently you've been appointed as the chairperson of the next reality series of The Apprentice South Africa.
Yes.
And of course, there's a gentleman in the US who's also became quite famous because of The Apprentice. Tell us about how were you approached?
So I was approached by someone I know who's an executive producer, Matthew Gray, and he sent me an email to say, he is busy negotiating with MGM Productions for the rights to produce another Apprentice show or The Apprentice in South Africa, and would I be interested? And I was actually in a board meeting and I got this email as you check your phone, on the side, hoping no one notices. And I sent him an email back with some laughing smiley faces and said, absolutely, with an exclamation mark. And that was supposed to be a joke. Subsequently to that, he kept sending me emails, the apprentice, but I just didn't have the time to read through them. My inbox is flooded with things. I kept pushing it back, saying, I need to read these emails. I didn't read these emails until, 2 months later of not reading emails. He phoned me and set up a Zoom meeting. And I said, okay, now is the time for me to tell him I can't really do this. I don't know how I can play this part. And I've never watched The Apprentice, by the way. So, apart from knowing, about the Trump and Alan Sugar in the UK association. So, in the Zoom meeting, he says to me, MGM Productions is hugely excited. They've approved everything. You are the first woman that would ever do it globally. And we are ready to go. And I went ready to go with what? But I think there's an opportunity, and I'm hoping that MGM Productions agrees to it. I want to vary it slightly. So, in the original traditional The Apprentice, people compete for a corporate job. I would like, and let's see if we can negotiate this, but since I'm now committed and involved, I would like to see the prize being not a job, but actually a business that I would be, or Signia, depending, would be happy to fund. So people compete for something more than
Yeah.
just a job.
Okay, give us the first taste of you fired. Have you practiced
I'll
it?
try. I haven't, and I want to come up with something. I'll give you that one, but I want to come up with something unique to me and not copying Trump. But unfortunately, you are fired.
Magda, so thank you so much for your time tonight and really good luck with the future.
Thanks, right. Thank you very much, listeners.
Dit was Magda Wrzycka, sy is die uitvoerende hoof van Signia. Ongelukkig het die tyd ons ingehaal en ons moet groet. 'n Potgooi van die program gaan bietjie later beskikbaar wees by moneyweb.co.za. Luisteraars is ook welkom om Moneyweb se toepassing op hulle slimfone af te laai. Al RSG geldsaake se potgoeie is ook daar beskikbaar. En daarmee moet ons groet van my Ryk van die Kerk en die Moneyweb span. Dankie vir die saamluister.